This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. We have results from the North Island Fairs and also prompting Hamilton's July Teens, which is Open 5A this Saturday. Barry's got a tip later on for you.
The North Island Teens was closely fourth affair. The winners were Sam Coots and Johnny Davidson. So 114 boards played over the weekend.
And what were the South Island pairs?
They played 120.
Not too different.
It wasn't, but I still thought even just having 28 board sessions instead of 30 board sessions made it a little bit easier to cope with. And we had a bit longer for lunch.
Runner-up, Leon Mayer and Max Morrison.
Pretty good South Island result there, wasn't it?
Yeah. And Barry and Jenny came in at third place. Well done, Barry.
Yeah, we were second for a while and we were leading for a while, but couldn't quite get there. There you go.
Very good. Hamilton teams.
Hamilton teams, we've only got 15 teams entered. We usually get more like 20 for this event. They've been a bit slow coming in, so still a chance to enter. Entries close at 11 o'clock on Thursday night. But I tell you what, if you really wanted to get in on Friday, I reckon they wouldn't turn you down.
You're probably right there. If you're looking to play on Saturday, Hamilton is where it's happening. So enter online and Barry shall see you there. Last week, Barry told us a story about Liz and Blair Fisher heading off to Wellington with a slight delay, and they rocked on up and substitutes had been playing their first board. And when Blair asked what the results were, it was minus 300. And the end result was plus 14. We carry on the story about their trip to Wellington. I could see him saying that. They'd be grinning all the way home when they hear that.
Yeah, well, all the way home, Marianne. It's funny that you say that. All the way home, that's quite a prophetic statement. Because, of course, they were scheduled to fly home.
Yeah.
Guess what? They never got to fly home.
What happened?
Well, there was some issue. They said something, there was a network fault, whatever the heck that means, and they didn't get to take their flight from Wellington. So they had to get a rental car, and they had to drive all the way from Wellington back to Hamilton Airport. Picking by the time they stopped for dinner, and they probably never got home till early hours of Monday morning.
Who said
it was easy playing in bridge tournaments?
Bugger me, because I remember being stuck in Wellington Airport. It was a really stormy day and there was lots of people around.
Sounds like one of those novels that starts off, it was a dark and stormy night.
And there was lightning happening everywhere, and bloody lightning struck the airport runway lights and they couldn't fly any planes. And there was people around and all the eateries there had run out of food. There was no rental cars. There were bugger all accommodation available because everyone had been delayed.
What happened? Did you walk home?
No, I had to ring up my brother-in-law and all these branch managers had to go out and find accommodation. And the only way I could get home the next day was to fly to Tauranga and then had to get picked up from there and come back to Hamilton. It was just a nightmare. Lizzie was probably happy driving home instead of not flying.
I don't know whether we should broadcast this, but Liz Fish, not the happiest flyer in the world. She probably was quite comfortable hopping in a car and driving home. Another question for our listeners, I'd really like them to email in. I don't think this is commercially sensitive. How much do you pay your directors per session, just directing at the club during the week? How much do they get? I know a couple of clubs I've been talking to, some of them pay $40 a session. Some of them pay $80 a session. Some of them don't pay anything. Some of them are less than 40. I'd be interested to know if anybody knows how much per session, or if maybe they're a director at the Hamilton Club. If you are a playing director, you also get play free. Would be interesting, wouldn't it?
To have a little look, yeah. I do know some clubs that don't pay anything in the Waikato Bays. Hamilton does pay their directors. We just want to know.
Certainly won't broadcast what club it is, but if you'd like to let us know, one thing's for sure, I don't think you're going to get rich being a bridge director in New Zealand.
No.
In fact, you'd be lucky if you got the minimum wage. That'd be pretty good. What is it, $23, $24 an hour? Something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, send us an email, bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com. Here's our last bits of our conversation we had with Judge Julie. We were talking about red and yellow cards and also kibitzing. And then we fell into the open and closed room when you're having trials. Really interesting. Tell us what you think. bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com.
Coming up next, we're heading off to the courthouse. Director, please.
How can I help?
Judge Julie presiding.
Do you think red cards and yellow cards are going to get used in New Zealand at any stage? Can you envisage that?
I don't know. I would think that depends on behaviour. I think in general, our behaviour is that we're a small community of people. We tend to know each other really well. And so I think that we have breaks on our behaviour for that reason in itself. And I think we do reasonably well in this country. But as I said, I do think that there is a problem with a increasingly aggressive attitude around dealing with people, being very defensive about what is happening or not happening, and not being fair about the directors there to apply the laws of the game. They're not there to be your friend necessarily, but they're also not there to be the person that is jumping up and down on top of you. They are there to make sure the game runs smoothly and that the laws are adhered to, and they should be appreciated, not denigrated.
So if you do get issued with a yellow card, what happens to you?
Well, I don't know, because I really don't know what this was about, because I wasn't in Morocco. I would think the same as it does for any other sport. It is a clear warning that the behaviour you are exhibiting, for whatever reason, is not acceptable.
Okay.
I wonder what happens with a red card. I mean, what if they send you off? What's going to happen then?
Well, they can ban you. Presumably, in most international matches, they could ban you from playing in the next one. They could ban you from being in the next event. Mm. They certainly would have power. And this possibly requires that the NBOs, the national bodies, are part of the equation in this. Maybe we should be talking to Alan about it.
Mm.
Right.
Well, you never know, Mariana. Directors might all be wandering around with yellow and red cards in their pockets, waving them around.
You don't have to. I just told everybody in the final at King's birthday, I just told everybody I was counting in VPs how much I was penalising them. I was joking. It's not something that you do. But it did express how much I wanted them to do things, perhaps the right way.
We were referring to news from the chair, and there is that little bit that says 16A ethic video mistakes. In that, there was 33 mistakes in total, and of the mistakes that they've noted, there was only one that was not a mistake, number 24.
It gives you a link, and also, if you're at the same place where you find the newsletter, it also has the answer sheet to what happens.
Yeah.
Okay. The only thing about it is that the Norwegian national body, or someone to do with Norway, was involved in making the video and the answer sheet, and some of their regulations are different to New Zealand. So there's something there about announcing every bid, which we don't do. We announce the one club opener and the one no trump openers. Some countries announce more, some less. So there was one thing in the answers that I saw that was different to our regulations.
Mm.
But apart from that, the gist of what there is in there is really informative and really helpful about what to do and what not to do.
I had a quick read through it, and one of them was that a kibitz comes to the table, and the rule with that is that the kibitzer didn't actually ask, they just plonked themselves down. Mm. And then made another comment that the kibitzer was actually watching two hands and they're only allowed to watch one.
Yeah.
And then the kibitzer asked one of the players, "Oh, how are you kids?"
Yep.
And they're not allowed to do
that. And the other thing is that, I don't know if it's in the current law book, but it used to be that if you had a kibitzer that was on your side, then you could be held accountable for their behaviour. So you don't want kibitzers to do things like that anyway. Because if they're pro you, there's a lot of things they shouldn't be doing.
Right.
We had the title of the New Zealand peers decided at Congress one year. It was really, really close, and there was a kibitzer who made a comment when they were near people that were in contention that meant that the particular board became a real big issue about who had and who hadn't won.
Oh.
Okay, and if you think of when you are watching, you have to be poker face because if you know anything about, you should never know anything about the hands because you won't have seen anyone else playing them. You are not allowed to wander around a room and follow a board around. All right, that is absolutely not allowed because you might give away information by the expression of your face. You are allowed to watch one person and only one person.
Was at Gold Coast, and I went to go and kibitz one of the young Americans playing, and the director came up to me and said, "I cannot stand and watch. I have to go and get a chair."
Yep, because you could see more than you're entitled to. And
Yeah.
the reason that you ask is some people feel really intimidated. Now, when we're playing
Right.
top level, like when we play the trials, we have what's called an open room and a closed room. And you'll get it with ViewGraph, where you can watch one pair because that's the pair that are on ViewGraph. And that is because the people in the open room can be watched. So you've got an implicit agreement there about that. But the people in the closed room cannot be.
Do you get to pick if you're in the open or the closed room?
That's up to your captain and you and who you're playing.
Oh, what do you like, Barry? Open or closed?
I don't mind.
No.
Oh, so okay. So it's not a
No.
big thing.
It's
No.
actually easier with ViewGraph, it's easier because you don't actually have the people there watching you, right? Whereas previously, before we had ViewGraph and computers, seriously, there were people around in the open room, there would be a lot of people watching a particular table, and you would know you could feel them behind you. Whereas when you're on ViewGraph, you don't know until you look later at the commentary about how stupid you've been. And I
Okay.
discovered, what was it, on BBO, I discovered they keep it for about 6 months, which is horrendous.
Wow.
So I
Okay.
reckon a lot of our listeners would be interested in this movie. There's all sorts of things that, like, just simple things. Like, one of them is like claiming without showing the opponents their cards. You
A
know,
lot of people do that.
I think they probably do. Yeah.
It's embarrassing because I am, to make you all feel happy, I am useless when it comes to claims and I need to see all the cards. And I play with someone who agrees with them and I don't see anything.
I could tell some stories about Judge Julie's analysis during a team's match, but I better not.
I'm okay when I can't see all the hands, all right? That is all I will say.
Doesn't stop her from trying, though, Mariana.
Oh, funny. Catch you next week. Let's go through your weekly tip. What have you got for us?
It couldn't be any simpler. You know how we go to all this trouble to try and find a fit in the majors?
Yeah.
That's what it's all about, is finding a fit in the majors. And then you start thinking, oh, I've got a really flat hand, maybe it'll play just as well in no trumps. And there's sort of things like when you've got lots of points, sometimes when you're playing in a pairs event, playing in no trumps, it's easier to make nine tricks and tens. You've all those things
Yeah.
saying. And a 5-3 fit's not as good as a 4-4. And you know what my tip is? I reckon if you've got a fit in a major, just play in it. That's my tip. Just give up on trying to figure out whether it's going to be right to play in no trumps. Sometimes it will be. It's so hard to figure out. It's stressful and you
Yeah.
can't really tell. So if you've got a fit in a major, my advice is play in the major. It won't always be right, but at least you'll stop your worrying about whether you should be in no trumps or not.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's a common theme. And you quite often hear people saying, oh, I should have been in no trumps, or, you know, we could have played it in no trumps. Or, I thought it would play just as well in no trumps. But, you know, particularly when partner's got a five card major,
Yeah.
you know they've got a doubleton at most in one of the other suits. If you aren't really strong in the suit they've got the doubleton in, then the major is going to be much safer.
So there you go. Isn't it that old saying that you generally want to play majors, no trumps, minors?
I only have one exception where I might play in no trumps when we've got a major fit, is that when partner opens one no trump or two no trumps, and I've got a hand that's 4-3-3-3 shape with enough points for game. I'm not even going to bother asking them if they've got a major because I'm so flat, I'm just going to bid no trumps. You could argue that we don't have a Fitna major. Well, not one that I know about anyway, because I didn't ask. But that's no guarantees that that'll be right either. I mean, often it'll still be right. Partner might have a small Doubleton somewhere, even if they've only got four of the major. Just because you're 4333 doesn't mean that they are.
But wasn't that shape only number four in the most common shapes of hands?
It was, but if you're looking at it, you know you've got it. And you're right. That's only the fourth most popular shape. They probably aren't 4333, so they will have a Doubleton somewhere.
As promised, we're with Peter Holland, finishing off his discussion about quantitative for no trump bid. Feel free to check him out with all his YouTube videos. Just look up Peter Holland's Bridge Player Australia and they'll all come available to you.
So let's now look at when you have a transfer sequence. This really depends on what other methods you actually have when you're transferring. Let's say we bid two diamonds, partner bids two hearts, and we jump to four no trumps. So is this Roman key card or is this quantitative four no trump? Because again, you might have the hand with 16, 17 points with five card heart suits, and you might just want to invite slam rather than just forcing to slam opposite a one no trump opening. So here, I would have this as quant again. This can be passed, it's just inviting partner and saying, I have precisely five hearts, do you want to go to slam or not? Bid six hearts, six no trump, or pass four no trump. The other way that you could set a suit and slam try really depends on your methods, but most partnerships have one of two ways that they could actually do this. Number one is they might just do natural slam tries. So if you jump to the three level, it might be a natural slam try for you, showing a six card suit. Or you might play Texas transfers where you do transfers at the four level as well. So for instance, you might do four diamonds as a transfer to hearts, showing a six card suit. And if you do this, this says we have six hearts and therefore we have a fit, so we're using Roman key card. If you have shown a fit, you are using Roman key card. If you've set the suit, you are using Roman key card. If you have a clear way to show that you have a fit but don't do it, then it's instead quantitative. So here, I would have four no trumps be Roman key card if you're playing Texas transfers, but if instead you transferred at the two level and then jump to four no trumps, it would be invitational. So these two sequences, one shows that you've only got five hearts, doesn't guarantee a fit, and just says, are you minimum or maximum? The other one guarantees a fit because you have to have at least six opposite your balance partner, and therefore you are asking for Roman key cards. So that's what I like to do over stamen and transfers. Basically, if you have a way to set the suit and choose not to do it, it's therefore natural and invitational. For instance, let's say it goes one spade by the opponents, and we bid two hearts, and it goes pass, and we might choose to bid four no trump. Here, I would take this as quant, like saying I've got quite a good hand, what do you want to do? Because I would have a way of supporting hearts, which would be bidding two spades. This would be a cue raise. I'd take the auction slower, this would promise the fit, and because I had an easy way of showing the fit, when you don't do that, then I like it to actually be natural and invitational. The exact range of what four no trump would be here is a bit hard to judge. Basically, you're inviting partner and saying, do you have a few extras for it? Here, we have an easy way to set hearts. We can make a cue raise. When you don't do that, then you don't have the fit. And this all comes back to the idea that I really like getting into cue bidding auctions, and four no trump should be the final spot along the ways. In these auctions, if you have a clear way that you can set the trump suit and then choose not to, then you don't have a fit. So there are always going to be times when it's really murky about what you've actually got. There's not always clear ways that you can set the trump suit. And in those ones, then it's usually, if you bid four no trumps, it'll be key card on the last bid suit. Only if there is a clear way that you could set the suit and choose not to, then you're denying a fit and would have it as quantitative four no trump. There's certain times where the opponents propel you up a bit higher and you don't have an easy way to set the suit. If that's the case, then what I like to do is just use four no trumps as key card on the last bid suit. For instance, the auction might go four hearts, four spades, and we go four no trump. Okay, we didn't have a way to set the suit. This is Roman key card on spades. If the auction escalates and you don't have a way to set the suit, then you're just doing it on the last bid suit. So basically, in your partnerships, you want to find out work out ways how you can actually set the Trump suit at a lower level, which allows you to get into queue bidding, which I think is a very underrated tool. Most people think that For No Trumps is the only slam trying tool. I dislike that a lot. You really need to be able to work out, how do I set the suit, move into a queue bidding auction, and then finally into key card. And if you skip all those steps and had a way to set the suit but choose not to, then I like For No Trump just to be a natural invite, because there's lots of hands that you actually pick up where you don't actually have a fit for partner, but you have some extra points and you're not really sure how to progress, and you just end up bidding three No Trumps, undervaluing your hand. As a general rule, what I like to do is, if you can set the suit and you choose not to, you don't have a fit, and therefore it's a natural invite rather than Roman keycard. So my general rules for Quant versus Blackwood is, after we've bid no trumps, it's quantitative for no trump. Keycard can be on the last bid suit if we didn't have a way to actually set the trump suit, in which case, in ambiguous spots, it is probably Roman keycard. If you did have a way to set the trump suit and choose not to, then it is a quantitative for no trump. And then a special case is after stamen and transfers, which not everyone knows how to actually set the suit. If you use stamen and your partner responds a major, bidding the other major at the three level sets the trump suit. If you are playing transfers, usually you have a way of showing a six card suit and a slam try, whether it be a Texas transfer or maybe just jumping to the three level initially. And if you don't use those but just transfer at the two level and then jump to four no trump, you're just showing a five card suit, which means that, again, you're just natural and invitational. Anyway, hope you enjoyed this lesson on quantitative for no trump when it applies, and I'll see you next time.
We spoke with Mel Auld earlier this week, who works for NZ Bridge. We asked her about her role, and also we've got a teaser on something coming out to the club. So listeners, you've only got a little taste, and we'll add some more in next week.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Come on, we're all on the edge of our seats. What do you do all day? We don't want to know about your ablutions or anything. What else?
Oh, I have a lot of fun getting to know clubs and designing ways to improve the profile of bridge in New Zealand, figuring out ways to support clubs to help raise their awareness locally and get more bums on seats in terms of lessons.
How's that going?
Yeah, really good. I guess I'd break it down into a couple of areas. So one is to build brand awareness, and one is to increase club success. And I split my time between those two things. And there's also activities that do a bit of both. I've been here just over a year now in this role and spent the first few months getting to know clubs. So managed to travel around, visit quite a few clubs and get to understand club culture, you know, what the issues are, what the pain points are, and where are the opportunities as well. It's quite heartening to see how passionate clubs are about increasing their membership, about this amazing game that sucks people in a big way. Yeah, and to see how enthusiastic they are and open to trying some new and different things.
So what's your next big project, Mel?
I can announce here first that we're launching an event marketing kit, a kit that clubs can have couriered to them to support them with events. So, you know, some are at local sort of farmers expos, you know, just local community events where you want to have a stand. We've got all the gear. We've got the banners. We've got the funny hat. Sonia Adams is in behind this. So there's costumes. There's the work. Yep. So we'll send more information out to clubs about that as they start thinking about what's coming up over spring and summer in terms of events. And, you know, that can be a good marketing tactic to add to your toolkit.
And to close the show, you can see that from the chair, Alan Morris has lodged his latest newsletter.
Yeah, on the front page of the NZ Bridge website, you can read it all for yourself. A couple of interesting points in there, Mariana. The membership's up.
Whoop, whoop.
286 new players to the game.
That's cool.
Yeah, so Waikato Bays and Wellington leading the charge with an increase of 75, an increase of 73 for Waikato Bays, an increase of 70 for Central Districts.
Very good. Stellar record by New Plymouth with 39. That is amazing.
Yeah, well done. Go New Plymouth. That was an interesting little start to his newsletter. They had a target of growing overall membership by 25%. Looks like they're on the way.
There's a new youth officer, Marcus Dudley from Te Puke.
He'll be good. And the Kerikeri Bridge Club celebrated their 60th birthday over the weekend.
Amazing, isn't it?
Interesting, our chat with Mel Auld. She's doing her bit to raise the profile.
And we'll have that coming to you over the next couple of weeks.
Anyway, so, from all the listeners from the Bridgestone, bon voyage.
FYI, people, this song is on my playlist for when I'm travelling. Ghost Town's Last Train to Nowhere. At the tables when I get back, and that probably will be Congress.
Meantime, we'll be talking to you from wherever we're talking from.
Yeah. Okay. Take care, everybody.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.